and welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the classical music series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2020 season. The program notes I'm reading today are for the concert by the North Carolina Symphony at 8 p.m. Friday, January 31st at the Holy Name of Jesus Cathedral in Raleigh. This performance will be conducted by Grant Llewellyn. The guest soloist will be organist Joseph Adam. The program on this performance will include the following. There'll be a timpani solo with more details to be announced at the concert as a beginning, and that will be followed by the Serenade in E minor for string orchestra by Edward Elgar. Then the Suite in G major for organ and strings featuring the soloist Joseph Adam playing the organ, and that work was composed by Ottorino Respighi. Then, following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony will return to the stage to perform Fantasia on a theme by Thomas Tallis, and that will be written, of course, by Ralph Vaughan Williams, and that'll be followed by a Fantasia and Fugue in G minor, featuring, again, the soloist Joseph Adam on the organ, by Johann Sebastian Bach. And finally, the Concerto in G minor for organ, strings, and timpani by Francis Poulenc. And that, again, will feature Joseph Adam, the organist. Now I'll begin our reading of the symphony notes. First, some information about our guest soloist. This concert is the first North Carolina Symphony performance for Joseph Adam, who was appointed cathedral organist at St. James Cathedral in Seattle in 1993 and director of music in 2018. At St. James Cathedral, he leads a program that includes three adult choirs and three youth choirs, providing music for nearly 600 services each year, as well as an extensive concert series that presents a wide range of choral and organ music. A dedicated educator for 20 years, Adam taught organ and harpsichord at the University of Puget Sound in Tacoma. Continuing this work, he was named Artist in Residence in the organ program at the University of Washington for the 2019-20 academic year, and as resident organist of the Seattle Symphony since 2003, he performs regularly as a member of the keyboard section of the orchestra, undertaking organ, harpsichord, piano, and celesta parts, as well as annual solo recitals. Educated at the University of Iowa, the Eastman School of Music, and the University of Washington, Adams also performs as a member of the Windwork Artists Cooperative. Now, information about the program. Following the timpani solo to begin this performance, the North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Serenade in E minor, Opus 20, by Edward Elgar. Elgar was born June 2, 1857, in Broadheath, England. He died February 23, 1934, in Worcester. This work was composed in 1892, the first performance, March 1892, the Worcester Ladies Orchestra Class, conducted by the composer himself. Now here's the story. Edward Elgar was born to a lower middle class family, the son of a music store owner. Elgar always had a chip on his shoulder for not being a gentleman and for not having served in the army. He was nervous, insecure, a hypochondriac, and prone to depression. He was also a Catholic, which did not help his social standing. Even a knighthood in 1904, several honorary degrees, and the invitation to compose music for the coronation of King George V did not assuage his inferiority complex. Well, to the chagrin of Britain's music establishment, Elgar, an outside lacking academic musical training, was the first English composer to achieve world fame since Henry Purcell in the 17th century. At 1899, at age 42, his Enigma variations propelled him from parochial obscurity to worldwide recognition. Previously, he had composed a number of choral and orchestral works that had garnered a modicum of success in Britain, as well as many salon pieces to make ends meet. He also wrote a number of works inspired by his beloved Alice, whom he married in 1889. His Serenade in E minor was one of these. Composed in 1892, this gentle work was rejected by one publisher with the comment that this class of music is practically unsaleable. That's a quote. But the German publisher Breitkopf accepted it. It was Elgar's first full score in print. Now here are some listening tips. The three movements are coherent in mood, a gentle but intense love song, devoid of extremes of passion, but heavy with what the British call sentiment. Throughout, Elgar uses several sighing motives, particularly the interval of an ascending minor seventh dropping to a major sixth. The two outer movements are in a flowing 6/8 meter. In both, we hear a murmuring accompaniment. These two movements frame the longer second movement and a slow larghetto tempo, which constitutes the emotional center of the piece. The instrumentation for this work, the Serenade in E minor, is four strings. Next, the symphony welcomes guest soloist Joseph Adam onto the stage to perform the Suite in G major for organ and strings. This is by Ottorino Respighi. Respighi was born July 9, 1879, in Bologna, Italy. He died April 18, 1936, in Rome. The work was composed in 1905, published in 1957. The first performance date is actually unknown. Here is the story. Ottorino Respighi was a musical nationalist, keenly interested in reviving Italy's musical heritage, especially its instrumental music. In 1905, he began editing the works of Baroque composers Claudio Monteverdi and Tommaso Antonio Vitali, although in an idiosyncratic manner, anathema to modern musicological practices. Here's some listening tips. In addition to composing a series of works based on the 17th century melodies, Respighi composed works that hark back to an earlier style while incorporating more modern harmonies. The Suite in G major was one of the first. It was, however, not published until 1957. In form and style, the suite most closely resembles the Baroque Concerto Grosso, because the organ part is integrally woven into the texture of the rest of the orchestra, often doubling the strings, as opposed to being a virtuosic standout solo. As in a typical Baroque dance, each movement is in ABA form. Unlike either model, the pace of all four movements is slow and stately. The first movement, the Preludio, uses a theme reminiscent of a Bach fugue. Of the four movements, it is the fastest and has the densest, most contrapuntal texture. The second movement, the aria, is a conventional slow movement in ABA form. Respighi's harmonies recall those of Edward Elgar in his serenades. The third movement, the pastorale, is a Baroque dance in a 12/8 meter, associated always with rural folk music. Here, the sections are divided between the strings and the organ soloist. And the fourth movement, the cantico, begins with a brief organ solo that introduces the theme. This work was composed for organ and strings. Following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform the Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis by Rafe Vaughan Williams. Vaughan Williams was born October 12, 1872, in Down Ampney, England. He died August 26, 1958, in Hanover Terrace. The work was composed in 1910, the first performance, September 10, 1910, at Gloucester Cathedral, conducted by the composer. Now here is the story. By the end of the 19th century, British composers were eager to recapture the glory of their musical past. In 1906, armed with degrees in music and history, and with a passion for collecting English folk tunes, Ralph Vaughan Williams was given the task of editing the music of the English hymnal. Plowing through some of the best and worst tunes, that's a quote, Vaughan Williams discovered a group of 9 melodies composed for the English Psalter in 1567 by Thomas Tallis, one of the English Renaissance's brightest stars. In 1910, Vaughan Williams composed a fantasia for 2-string orchestras and string quartet for the Three Choirs Festival, a long-standing music festival taking place in the cathedrals of Gloucester, Worcester, and Hereford. First performed in the Gloucester Cathedral, the 3-string ensembles were to be placed at a significant distance from each other in order to enhance the antiphonal effect, something not always possible in a concert hall. One of the composer's earliest works, it remains his most popular. Here's some listening tips. The fantasia is, by definition, a free form, varying and developing a theme without the formal structure of a theme and variations. In this work, Vaughan Williams seamlessly combines Tallis's original tune with musical motifs of his own invention. Vaughan Williams was particularly taken by one of Tallis's melodies in the Phrygian mode, a scale with a flatted second and seventh. This mode sounds somber and exotic to modern ears. The phrasing is fluid and irregular, producing a soaring effect as the piece gradually crescendos to a dramatic climax. Vaughan Williams is especially interested in providing a sense of antiphonal dialogue, contrasting the high and the low strings, and contrasting the differently sized ensembles, creating a sense of listening to monastic chant. This work was scored for strings. Next, organist Joseph Adams returns to the stage along with the North Carolina Symphony to perform the Fantasia and Fugue in G minor by Johann Sebastian Bach. Bach was born March 31, 1685, in Eisenach, Germany. He died July 28, 1750, in Leipzig. This composition was completed around 1720. The first performance is unknown. Here is the story. It is difficult for us to realize that in his lifetime, Bach's fame rested on his virtuosity on the clavier, the harpsichord, and organ, and not on his compositions. For many years, it was his organ playing that supported him and with which he tried to improve his employment situation. At that time in Lutheran Germany, the local church was the center of musical life, and the music sprang from the principal instrument of the church, the organ. To be a composer was, in most cases, synonymous with being an organist, and Bach, the composer, was known primarily as a composer of organ music. Bach's prodigious technical ability on the organ opened for him new musical possibilities unheard of before. His musicianship and musical scholarship acquainted him with all the major musical luminaries of his day, and, as was the common habit, he copied their music and often used it for his own compositions. Many 17th and 18th century composers are known today only through the music Bach borrowed from them, making them immortal. Few today would remember the name Jan Adams Reinken, an organist and composer who lived from 1623 to 1722, if Bach had not used the theme from his Sonata No. 5 for the fugue of the Fantasia and Fugue in G minor. Bach probably composed this work in 1720, apparently for a performance at the Katharinenkirche in Hamburg, honoring the 97-year-old Reinken who was present. Now here's some listening tips. One of the qualities to listen for in works for solo organ is the registration, which pipes the performer selects. The entire character of the piece can change based on the registration, not to mention with the size and quality of the instrument. The selection of registers renders the organist a co-composer, or at least arranger. The work combines the most freewheeling genre in Western classical music with one of the strictest. The Fantasia is full of ornamentation that Bach might originally have improvised at the keyboard in performance. It alternates between elaborately ornamented sections and more sedate sections of chordal harmony and simple counterpoint. The fugue is also made up of alternating sections. The first involves the fugue subject, the voices of which enter one after the other. These fugal passages alternate with sections of freely composed counterpoint, multiple melodic lines heard simultaneously. This work was composed for solo organ and strings. And the North Carolina Symphony, along with the guest organist Joseph Adam, conclude this concert with the Concerto in G Minor for Organ, Strings, and Timpani by Francis Poulenc. Poulenc was born January 7, 1899 in Paris. He died January 30, 1963, also in Paris. The work was composed in 1934 through 1938. The first performance, December 16, 1938, conducted by Nadia Boulanger with Maurice Duruflet as soloist. Now here is the story. Francis Poulenc came from an affluent family of pharmaceutical manufacturers, the forerunners of today's Rhône Poulenc Company, and was considered the black sheep of the family. It was from his mother that he inherited his musical talent and received support in his avocation. From his father, he received enough money to sidestep the family business. Poulenc's style owed much to Ravel's Impressionism and to Neoclassicism. He never participated in the musical experimentations so popular among his colleagues in Paris between the wars and after. The Concerto for Organ, Strings, and Timpani was composed on a commission from Princess Edmond de Polignac, a lover of music and a great supporter of Poulenc. By the way, she was American by birth, heiress to the Singer sewing machine fortune, and had also commissioned his 1932 concerto for two pianos. For the organ part, the composer sought the help of famed organist and composer Maurice Duruflet, who was the soloist in the first public performance. Now here's some listening tips. The concerto is cast in a single movement with several contrasting sections, in which Poulenc, who, quote, one writer, moves from Bach's G minor Fantasia to the fairground and back. Well, some of the writing for the organ is quite unusual, especially the quiet sections that border on the romantic and sentimental. It opens with a lengthy, slow introduction, an exact quote from the Bach Fantasia and Fugue in G minor, followed by an allegro. The second theme, however, seems to take on more importance for Poulenc, since it is this one that he brings back toward the end of the concerto. Poulenc took the title King of the Instruments seriously. The technical demands of the organ part pushed the instrument to its limits. This work was orchestrated for solo organ, strings, and for timpani. These program notes were written and copyrighted by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn. And you've been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'll be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2020 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thank you so much for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.